Iran's foreign minister calls for the immediate release of an Iranian citizen jailed in Sweden over accusations leveled against him by a terrorist group. Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails write to a letter to Hajj pilgrims urging them to pray for the freedom of prisoners of Al-Quds. Also ahead, NATO says it has no plans to set up bases in Sweden and Finland once the two Nordic states become full members of the military alliance. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran's foreign minister has asked for the immediate release of an Iranian citizen jailed in Sweden over alleged rights abuses. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a late Tuesday phone call with his Swedish counterpart, Ann Linde. He noted that the long-standing relations between the two countries should not be affected by propaganda and baseless measures of a criminal terrorist group. Amir Abdullahian said Iranian citizen Hamid Nouri is in Sweden's jail over groundless accusations leveled against him by the anti-Iran Mujahideen Khalq terrorist group. The Swedish foreign minister, for her part, said her country's government and judiciary would not be swayed by the group's anti-Iran propaganda. Hamid Nouri is accused of rights violations against members of the anti-Iran terror group. In the 1980s, Swedish prosecutors have requested life imprisonment for him. Iran says the allegations against Nouri are baseless and his trial is a political show. Iran's foreign minister, meanwhile, says an agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal is possible only based on mutual understanding and interests of all sides. Then Amir Abdullahian once again voiced Iran's readiness to negotiate a strong and durable agreement. He criticized the U.S. for its inability to make a decision during the negotiations. Amir Abdullahian said if the U.S. wants a deal, it must stop insisting on its unilateral demands. His remarks came after a Tuesday phone call with the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. Borrell tweeted that the parties to the JCPOA revival talks must make decisions now if they want an agreement. The talks were stalled for more than 3 months over excessive demands put forth by the U.S. A new round of indirect talks between Tehran and Washington was held in Qatar's capital city of Doha last week. Following the negotiations, the two sides said that they would keep in touch about the next stage of the talks. As the annual Hajj rituals reach their climax, a number of Palestinian prisoners have written a letter asking the pilgrims not to forget them in their prayers. The prisoners ask the pilgrims to wish them steadfastness and victory in the face of difficulties. They also ask the pilgrims to pray for the liberation of occupied Al-Quds from the Israeli regime's occupation. Four of the letter's writers were among the six prisoners who staged a jailbreak from an Israeli prison last September. The pilgrims will start performing the rituals in the holy city of Mecca on Thursday. About 1 million Muslims are expected to attend the 2022 Hajj pilgrimage after 2 years of disruption caused by the COVID pandemic. It's been 40 years since the abduction of four Iranian nationals in Lebanon. The men who were on a diplomatic mission were abducted by militiamen and handed to Israel. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
Iran's embassy in Lebanon held a ceremony to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the abduction of four Iranian nationals in Lebanon. Iranian ambassador to Lebanon lauded the four men as messengers of peace to Lebanon, noting that Israel was behind their abduction.
We are pursuing the case of our four diplomats via diplomatic and legal means, as their fate is very important for us. This ceremony is being held to honor and remember our diplomats, and it helps us shed light on the fate of our kidnapped diplomats. We have repeatedly said that we have documents and evidence showing our diplomats were handed over to the Israeli regime following their abduction. Israel is politically and legally held accountable for their abduction. We will pursue their case until their fate is known.
A military attaché at Tehran's embassy in Beirut, Ahmad Mutavassilian, along with Iranian charge d'affaires in Lebanon, Mohsen Mousavi, an employee of the embassy, Taqi Rasdegar Muqaddam, and a photographer for the Islamic Republic news agency, Qasim Akhavan, were abducted on July 4, 1982. Lebanese militiamen from the Lebanese Forces Group admitted to kidnapping the four men who were on a diplomatic mission in North Lebanon. Investigations show that they were last handed over to Israel at the time.
The legal follow-up of this case in the last few years proves without a doubt that these men were kidnapped on a militia checkpoint, and it was proven that they were put in the jails of that well-known militia which was collaborating with the occupation entity. There are testimonies that they were handled over to the occupation forces. The Lebanese government has a responsibility to follow up the case to highest levels, including the International Criminal Court.
Those in attendance called for an objective investigation by the United Nations and the International Red Cross. Although there is information about those who abducted the Iranian diplomats and their whereabouts, the fate of these Iranians remains shrouded in mystery. The families and Iranian officials believe they remain detained in Israeli jails. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Karish gas field in the eastern Mediterranean remains at the heart of disputes between Lebanon and Israel. The Hezbollah resistance movement says its recent flying of three drones towards the field was a warning to the regime not to carry out any extraction operations before the dispute is resolved. The movement added that the drones launched at the weekend accomplished their reconnaissance missions. It said the move was also aimed at reinforcing Lebanon's stance in indirect negotiations with the Zionist regime regarding demarcation of areas in the dispute region. Hezbollah and high-ranking Lebanese officials say Israel's operations in the Karish gas field are an effort to plunder Lebanon's offshore natural resources. Lebanon has also dismissed Israel's claims that the field falls within the regime's so-called exclusive economic zone. We have talked to political commentator Karen Barrett about the maritime dispute between Israel and Lebanon. He believes the regime violates international law and is not interested in negotiations.
The Zionist regime is notorious for establishing what they like to call facts on the ground in total violation of international law, and then thumbing their nose at the international community and at their adversaries and daring them to do something about it, and then using their power in terms of their often unpaid agents who infest the highest levels of power throughout the West, dominating the American media and financial sector, for example. And with all of that power, they think they can get away with almost anything. They can flout the law. They can be an international outlaw, pariah regime and still survive and thrive. And unfortunately, much of the time, they're right. Here, of course, we're dealing with a very sensitive issue. Energy pipelines and energy supplies are at the heart of the disputes that have led to wars and could lead to wars, not only in the West Asia region, but elsewhere. It's a big factor, actually, in what's happening in Ukraine right now. So it's a dangerous flashpoint, and the reason it's so dangerous is that we're dealing with an outlaw regime that is not interested in negotiating. They're just going to go and grab what they want. And the only way to deal with such a regime is to tell them, basically send the message that if you pursue that course, we have a way of making your life more difficult. And that's precisely what Lebanon is doing.
The International Federation of Journalists says it will be a partner in a lawsuit filed against the Israeli regime at the International Criminal Court. The case was brought following the murder in May of veteran Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh by the regime's troops in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin.
The International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, says the Federation will be a partner in the lawsuit filed against its occupation in the International Criminal Court. A member of the executive board of the Federation says the move came after the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate succeeded in persuading the Federation to file a lawsuit against Israel in the International Court. IFJ stated that the filing comes in light of the Israeli aggression against Palestinian journalists and people. Earlier, the Journalist Syndicate had said that it succeeded in exposing Israel's acts of aggression against media professionals and the Palestinian people. The circumstances of Shirin Abu Akleh's killing on May the 11th have been investigated by several international organizations. All concluded that it was a bullet fired from an Israeli rifle that killed the Al Jazeera correspondent and injured her fellow journalist as they covered an Israeli raid in Jenin. Multiple witnesses also agreed with the probes, stating that Israeli forces shot the veteran Palestinian reporter. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera and its host country Qatar pointed the finger at Israel from the outset. But the question is, will there and can there be accountability for the crimes committed by Israel?
And the absence of punishment shows hypocrisy, double standards, and deception and lies. So this is an opportunity for journalists to present all of the best documented evidence, research, discovery that they've done about crimes against humanity that the Israeli apartheid regime has committed. And the more international they go, the louder they go, the more they invite other countries to be participants, to join the lawsuit against Israel, the more you're building international consensus in support of the people who have been violated, dehumanized, killed, robbed, or in other way injured by this grotesque apartheid Israeli policy and agenda of genocide, bigotry, and destruction. So it's a very essential step, and I'm glad they're taking it.
Earlier this month, Palestinian officials handed over to U.S. forensic experts the bullet that killed Abu Akleh. But despite all the evidence pointing fingers towards Israel, the U.S. said it could not reach a definitive conclusion on the origin of the bullet. Meanwhile, Abu Akleh's family have expressed their anger over the U.S.'s disregard for what several courts and rights organizations have stated and its failure to accept that its ally has murdered a journalist in broad daylight.
When it comes to targeting and killing of journalists, Israel has never apologized for its wrongdoing and in nearly all cases that have shifted the blame on Palestinians. The U.S. also seems to be an indirect complicit actor through its silence over Israeli crimes. As many as 45 Palestinian journalists have been killed while working in the occupied Palestinian territories since the year 2000.
The UN has said Israel was guilty of the crime and expressed disturbance over Israel's failure to conduct a probe into Palestinian journalist Abu Akleh's killing. The US, on the other hand, has not condemned this act, yet aside from saying there needs to be an independent investigation, raising questions about whether the US is seeking the truth or to protect its ally.
Well, absolutely, the US is guilty of supporting the regime. The US is guilty from enabling the regime to engage in war crimes and crimes against humanity. The U.S. has been guilty of stealing money from the American people and giving it to the Israeli apartheid regime and giving them weapons and, in fact, looking the other way when Israel had developed nuclear weapons. But that's another story. But Israel's crimes and abuses against the Palestinians, against the Syrians, against Lebanon, against all sorts of countries and native peoples, the U.S. is the partner in crime that is responsible. And if the U.S. does not hold a moral standard and a very clear objectivity and a dedication to truth and justice, then the U.S. is showing that it has no dedication to truth and justice, but instead has a dedication to lies and crime.
The murder of Abu Akleh, which sparked global outrage, only adds to Israel's long list of atrocities against Palestinians. But that fury has yet to translate into any concrete measures, particularly by international bodies such as the UN Security Council. So far, several international organizations have provided evidence of Israel's brutality against Palestinians. UN resolutions have also been passed against Israel. Yet no one, including the United Nations Security Council, has used any of its tools to ensure its resolutions. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court has ruled that it has a mandate to investigate the occupied territories and has accepted the Palestinians after they were granted non-member observer status at the UN. This comes despite Palestinians' inability to join the ICC, as Israel is not a member and Palestinians do not qualify as a sovereign state.
NATO says it has no plan to set up bases in Sweden and Finland once they complete the membership process that was launched on Tuesday. The alliance's deputy secretary general says NATO is not going to send troops to the two countries, as they are capable of defending themselves. The remarks came shortly after NATO members signed the accession protocol for the two countries. Now it is up to parliaments in all 30 member states to ratify membership of Stockholm and Helsinki. The two Nordic states requested to join NATO after Russia launched its military operation in Ukraine in February. Russia has repeatedly expressed its opposition to NATO's expansion. Russian President Vladimir Putin warned last week that Moscow will respond symmetrically if NATO deploys troops or infrastructure to Sweden and Finland. Turning elsewhere, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is in fresh crisis after two of his cabinet members, or cabinet ministers, that is, stepped down over his leadership. Health Secretary Sajid Javid resigned from his position. He said he could no longer fulfill his duties in good conscience, as he did not believe in the Prime Minister's ability to govern in the national interest. Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak was next to quit from his job, saying the government should be run, quote, properly, competently, and seriously. Opposition Labour leader Keir Starmer said Johnson's government is collapsing. The resignations come as Johnson faces backlash over keeping a former Conservative Party whip in his post, despite being accused of sexual misconduct. The Prime Minister survived a no-confidence vote last month after 41% of his party colleagues wanted to oust him. That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Greetings to Hajj and Land of Revelation. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. This year, the travelers of the Land of Revelation become happy since the routes to Mecca and Medina are open after 2 years of closure due to coronavirus pandemic. Greetings to the Land of Revelation, the Land of Divine Prophets, the Land of Prophet Muhammad and his progeny, blessings of God upon them. This year, like other years, pilgrims have converged from all over the Islamic world in white garbs to indicate detachment to colors, races, languages, and any social position. This uniform shows unity of Muslims as they utter Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik, meaning, O God, I have heard your call and have come to obey your command. Hajj is the most glorious religious ceremony and a very important Islamic obligation. Hajj is one of the basic fundamentals of Islam, and abandoning it without a religious reason is considered as a great sin. This huge gathering of Muslims was cancelled for 2 years due to the spread of coronavirus disease. The lovers of God's symbolic house in Mecca, Kaaba, and the Prophet's green-domed mausoleum in Medina were counting days and hours to rush to these sacred lands to perform pilgrimage and become Haji. Mahmoud Moravej, one of the pilgrims of Hajj in previous years, has related precious memories of his journey to Mecca. He says, as we were going towards God's house and the Holy Mosque, we were happy and excited. The more we approached, the more we felt free. I was restless, and like a curious child, I felt happy and successful. I felt I was nearing my beloved. Finally, we reached Bab al-Salam, or the Gate of Kaaba. A big number of people were sitting inside and outside the mosque. As we crossed the overpass bridge of Safa and Marwa, we reached the old part of Masjid al-Haram. We left one another and everyone went to a direction to speak to their unmatched beloved in solitude. Mr. Moravej continues, those were strange moments, as if you had been quiet, lonely in a scorching desert, and now you have passed through loneliness with thirsty lips to reach a fresh spring. As if you had been a child apart from your mother, and now you have found yourself in her bosom. You fall prostrate without any control and shed tears of love. I was staring at the Kaaba. I was smooth and transparent. I was calm and lovely. I had taken refuge to the Kaaba because it is the refuge of all those who come to it with their innate nature to reach calm. I was just seeking pure worship. Thus, I performed 2 rak'at prayers and started circumambulating God's house while reciting Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik. The huge crowd of white-clad pilgrims is turning around the Kaaba while supplicating and praising God. These are unique moments, and one feels that prayers are very close to fulfillment. The Kaaba is the central point of love, and you are the minute parcel in this ocean of monotheists. Here, you not only forget others, you also forget yourself, and are plunged in pure worship and servitude of God. On the 8th of Dhul-Hajj, the Hajj rituals start. Pilgrims become muhrim. It means that they perform ritual washing and several things become haram or forbidden for them. Then they put on the white garb or ihram as the symbol of obedience, servitude and submission to God. Then they recite Labbaik, Allahumma Labbaik. The commander of the faithful and the first infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, says, God has prescribed the Hajj of His respected house on you. It is the very house which He made it as man's qibla, so that people rush towards it like thirsty ones and take refuge in it like pigeons. God, the celebrated, made Kaaba as the symbol of humbleness of servants before His greatness and the sign of their admission to His greatness and power, and chose the hearers among humans to answer His invitation to Hajj and admit His word and put their fruit in the position of prophets. The pilgrim or Haji, after Ihram, moves towards Arafat Desert and stays there from noon till dusk of the 9th of Dhul-Hajj. Arafat is the place where Imam Hussein bequeathed to us his most beautiful and profound supplication in his last pilgrimage to Mecca. The followers of the Ahlul Bayt always take Imam Hussein as a role model and recite this supplication congregationally. Pilgrims then move toward Mash'arul Haram and stay there till the sunrise of the next day. After the sunrise of the 10th of Dhul-Hajj, or Feast of Sacrifice, Hajis set out for Mina. There they perform Ramye Jamarat. It means that they throw seven pebbles to huge columns as a symbol of a stoning Satan. This was the place where Prophet Abraham, peace upon him, stoned Satan as the latter was tempting him. Then the Hajis slaughter a sheep in memory of Abraham. Shaving the hair for men and circumambulation of Kaaba, ritual prayer after circumambulation and sa'i between Safa and Marwa hills are other rituals which Hajis should perform. The Hajj has been mentioned in several ayahs of the Noble Quran. There is even a surah in the Quran called Hajj. However, we finish this program with ayahs 96 and 97 of Surah Ali Imran, which read, indeed, the first house to be set up for mankind is the one at Baqa, blessed and guidance for all nations. In it are manifest things and Abraham's station, and whoever enters it will be secure. And it is the duty of mankind toward Allah to make pilgrimage to the house for those who can afford the journey to it. And should anyone renege, Allah is indeed without need of the creatures.
Food for thought.
Salam to our esteemed listeners. Today we present you in our Food for Thought an interesting aphorism of the Prophet's first infallible successor, the Commander of the Faithful, and the leader of the pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. He says, "Acquire wisdom and truth from whoever you can, because even an apostate can have them. But unless they are passed over to a faithful Muslim and become part of wisdom and truth that he possesses, they have a confused existence in the minds of apostates."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, good manner and to joke. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of good manner and to joke. In the Islamic teachings, we see that to joke or joking is one of the kinds or one of the characteristics of having a good manner. But what does it mean when we say to joke with someone or to have fun with someone? When we talk about the jokes, generally what we see in the society, mainly the jokes are made to hurt specific race, maybe specific nation, or it is for people. Maybe we put different names on the people, we make fun of them, we make joke. And even when we say a joke, it is generally hurting someone in some cases. And when we see all these things and we say that this is a part of the good manner or husn-e khulq, this contradicts. On the other hand, when we refer to the Islamic definition of having a joke, it means, or to joke, it means that it should not hurt others. It means that to joke in a way so that everyone becomes happy. So you make your brothers in iman, you make the people that are sitting next to you, they become happy. And that's what mizah or the joke in Islamic definition means. And when we look at the even narrations from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says, "Inni la imzahu wa la aqulu illa haqqa." I do joke, I do make jokes, but I do not say except what is haq, what is truth. And this does not hurt other people. It makes people happy. And this is what we need to strive for. This is what we need to go for. If we want to have jokes or to make jokes, it should be in a way so that it does not hurt others' feelings. Rather, it makes them happy, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the good manner and to make jokes or to joke in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that in Islam, to joke is a part of husne khulq. It is part of good manner. Whereas we see that when Yunus Shaybani, one of the companions of the Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, came to him and Imam Sadiq asked him that how much you fun, like you have fun with your friends when you're sitting with them or you say jokes. He said very less, very less. And the Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said that do not be like this. Why? Because to joke is a part of good manner. And with this, you make your brothers happy. You make your people, the friends that you're seeing with them, you make them happy. On the other hand, when we look at the Prophet, obviously in his life, there are many stories. For example, once the Prophet was sitting on the dining table with his companions, and next to him, Imam Ali was sitting, and they all were eating some dates. And the Prophet, when he had a date, he put the seed of date in front of Imam Ali. So the rest of the companions, when they saw that the Prophet, every time when he picks up a date, he eats it, and then he puts the seed of the date in front of Imam Ali, they started to put all those seeds in front of Imam Ali. When they finished eating, Prophet said to Imam Ali that, "Oh Ali, have you eaten all these dates that were in front of us? Because you know all the seeds are in front of you." Then Imam Ali replied nicely and happily, and he said that, "Oh Prophet, pardon me, but I was eating dates and I putting the seeds away, but all of you have eaten the dates with the seeds." So this was a joke which was made by the Prophet and Imam Ali, and this is to make happy each other. There was no insult, there was no abuse in it. And this was something which has been taught by the Prophet and Imam Ali, that when you're sitting somewhere, if you want to have a fun, you can have such things which makes everyone happy and it does not hurt anyone, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warned that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil. In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do, and there you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass-bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular, the engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle has also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state, a tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe, and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe, and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail, deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Staff at the National Zoo of Cuba in the capital city of Havana are celebrating a new arrival of a rare baby white rhinoceros. The little calf, named Al, quickly became popular among other animals in the park after he was born. He is part of a conservation program that will add to a gene bank for future breeding. Al is the second white rhinoceros to be born in captivity in 18 years. The park is home to 8 white rhinos and 4 black ones. Zoo staff say the park has one of the largest exhibits of this mammal among zoos in Latin America. White rhinos are endangered species and their population has dwindled due to illegal poaching and environmental destruction.
Persian fallow deer is a unique but endangered species known for its sleek and spotted body. In this report, our correspondent Youssef Jalali takes us on a quick tour around one of the world's few protected shelters of Persian fallow deer in Iran's city of Sari.
We had to keep quiet and avoid making any sounds to film them, as they are shy and swift, and the slightest sound could send them sprinting and jumping away. Over 60 Persian fallow deer roam in Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Iran's northern city of Sari. The endangered species is carefully protected here to be safe from predators and poachers.
The Persian fallow deer is native to Iran's Khuzestan province, but due to loss of habitat and threats posed to them by predators such as jackals and wild cats, they are endangered and need to be protected in semi-natural refuge like this one.
Persian fallow deer are mainly indigenous to open woodland areas spanning from East Mediterranean coasts to West and Southwest Iran. By 1875, they had gone extinct in all of their main habitats, except in southwest Iran. After a captive breeding program, the population has rebounded from only a handful of deer in the 1960s to over 200 individuals in Iran.
Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge is a 55 hectares wide. It was introduced in 1962 as a shelter for the Persian fallow deer when the species was on the brink of extinction. At that time, 5 deer were captured and translocated to this refuge. Over the past 6 decades, their number have been multiplied through captive breeding.
The Persian fallow deer is a rare ruminant mammal belonging to the family Cervidae. They're physically larger than other fallow deer, and their antlers are bigger and less palmate. Their special beauty has turned this sanctuary into a hot tourist attraction,
in Iran's north. This sanctuary is a tourist destination for visitors who would like to see the Hyrkanian forests in Iran's north and at the same time enjoy the wildlife and learn about efforts made to save the Persian fallow deer from extinction.
In 2015, the Persian fallow deer was registered in the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. Dashtinaz authorities hope through continued captive breeding, the population of these special creatures will soon reach the desired number, and hopefully they will be reintroduced to their natural habitat in southwest Iran.
While they live far from their original habitat, these alluring creatures feel at home here, where they will be safe from the dangers lurking outside, which may lead to their extinction. So here, Persian fallow deer continue to embellish the nature and charm visitors with their beauty. Yusuf Jalali from Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Sari.
Catching fish makes you forget even the most complex problems, but think the moment you catch the strangest one. Well, a Cambodian fisherman has caught what researchers say is the world's biggest freshwater fish ever recorded. The giant fish, which weighs around 300 kilograms and 4 meters long, was caught last week from the Mekong River. The female stingray was released back into water after being electronically tagged to allow scientists to monitor her movement and behavior. The fish was named Barami, meaning full moon in the Khmer language. An American fish biologist, Dana Lee, says the data collected from Barami can help protect the species and its habitat.
We got a call this morning at breakfast that they had caught a giant stingray here at Coprea. So we dropped everything. People came up from Phnom Penh, and we're here now just at sunset. Just tagged the giant, 330-kilogram giant stingray here in the Mekong River, and released it here right at sunset.
The stingray dethrones the former record holder, a 290-kilogram catfish found in northern Thailand in 2005. More than 1,000 species live in the Mekong River. The famous waterway originates in China and twists south through parts of Thailand, Laos, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Scientists have warned that plastic waste and dam threaten wildlife even in the deepest stretches of the Mekong.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Following its unpardonable crime of 3rd July 1988, the U.S. has resorted to the most heinous measures against the Islamic Republic of Iran, such as increased support for the MKO hypocrites, a vast variety of endless sanctions, politicization of Iran's peaceful nuclear program, assisting the Israeli regime to assassinate Iranian scientists, and launching the drone attack that martyred General Qasem Soleimani at Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020, while on a diplomatic mission to Iraq. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, International Staff Writer. This article is published under the heading Flight 655, irrefutable proof of U.S. terrorism. Stay tuned for more. Flowers floated once again in the Persian Gulf waters near Hengam Island in the Strait of Hormuz on Sunday, July 3rd, as bereaved family members of martyrs of Iran Air Flight 655 joined by Iran's coast guards and related officials paid tributes to the souls of their loved ones who were criminally killed by the super terrorists called the United States of America. It is now 34 years since the dastardly downing of the Airbus A300 with 290 passengers, including 66 children on board by the USS Vincennes, which had deliberately entered Iran's coastal waters for shooting down the 4 days a week scheduled flight from Bandar Abbas to Dubai. This crime against humanity of the great Satan was meant to lift the sagging morale of the Baathist war machine on the battlefields of the eight-year imposed war with a green signal to Saddam of the repressive minority regime of Baghdad to continue to batter Iranian combatants, as well civilians with internationally banned chemical weapons. It was also the Yankee way of sadistically celebrating the July 4th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence in 1776 of the 13 rebellious New England states. Captain William C. Rogers, who carried out this cowardly act of terrorism, was under direct orders from President Ronald Reagan to wreak vengeance upon Iran for the Islamic Revolution that ended American hegemony and inspired the Iranian people to blunt and push back the U.S.-supported Baathist invasion. He was later decorated for this unmanly act as further proof of devilish nature of the Republican and Democrat regimes that play musical chairs at the White House. The downing of Flight 655 was thus neither the first act of U.S. state terrorism against Iran, nor will it be the last, given the unstoppable progress of the Islamic Republic in all fields, including science and technology, along with the spirit of resistance infused by Iran into the elected governments and popular movements of the region and beyond to defeat the designs of the macabrely murderous Takfiris, the Zionists, the imperialists, and the reactionaries. The U.S., which along with Britain had instigated the 1953 coup to overthrow the democratically elected government in Tehran and then for 26 years held the nation hostage, has never ceased its plots against Iran and the Iranian people. Following its unpardonable crime of July 3, 1988, the U.S. has resorted to the most heinous measures against the Islamic Republic, such as increased support for the MKO hypocrites, a vast variety of endless sanctions, politicization of Iran's peaceful nuclear program, assisting the Zionist regime to assassinate Iranian scientists, and launching the drone attack that martyred General Qasem Soleimani at Baghdad Airport on January 3, 2020, while on a diplomatic mission to Iraq. Washington, however, has miserably failed in its misadventures, as is evidenced by the tooth-smashing blows it has received and will continue to receive until the last American intruder is kicked out from the entire region and, God willing, the illegal Zionist entity ceases to exist. Examples galore in this regard, such as Iran's sophisticated cyber tactics in forced landing of the highly advanced U.S. RQ-170 drone on December 5, 2011, the spectacular downing of the radar-evading RQ-4A Global Hawk surveillance drone on June 20, 2019, with a Mach 5 speed surface-to-air missile and the missile barrage that shattered the U.S. Ain al-Assad base in Iraq on January 8, 2020. The sacred blood of the martyrs, whether of Flight 600.